in the beginning. From the moment you are born, you deliver a message to the world. What is the message? The message is you, that child. It's the presence of an angel, a messenger from the infinite in a human body. The infinite, a total power, creates a program just for you, and everything you need to be what you are is in the program. You're born, you grow up, you mate, you grow old, and in the end you return to the infinite. Every cell in your body is a universe of its own. It's intelligent. It's complete. And it's programmed to be whatever it is. You're programmed to be you, whatever you are. And it makes no difference to the program what your mind thinks you are. The program is not in the thinking mind. It's in the body, in what we call the DNA. And in the beginning, you instinctively follow its wisdom. As a very young child, you know what you like, what you don't like, when you like it, when you don't. You follow what you like, you try to avoid what you don't like. You follow your instincts, and those instincts guide you to be happy, to enjoy life, to play, to love, to fulfill your needs. Then what happens? Your body begins to develop. Your mind begins to mature, and you begin to use symbols to deliver your message. Just as the birds understand the birds and the cats understand the cats, the humans understand the humans through a symbology. If you were born on an island and then lived all alone, it might take you 10 years, but you would give a name to everything that you see, and you would use that language to communicate a message, even if it was only to yourself. Why would you do this? Well, it's easy to understand that it's not because humans are so intelligent. It's because we're programmed to create a language, to invent an entire symbology for ourselves. As you know, all around the world, humans speak and write in thousands of different languages. Humans have invented all kinds of symbols to communicate, not only with other humans, but more importantly with ourselves. The symbols can be sounds that we speak, motions that we make, or handwriting and signs that are graphic in nature. There are symbols for objects, ideas, music, and mathematics. But the introduction of sounds is the very first step, which means we learn to use symbols to speak. The humans who come before us already have names for everything that exists, and they teach us the meaning of sounds. They call this a table. They call that a chair. They also have names for things that only exist in our imagination, like mermaids and unicorns. Every word that we learn is a symbol for something real or imagined, and there are thousands of words to learn. If we observe children who are 1 to 4 years old, we can see the effort they make trying to learn an entire symbology. It's a big effort that we usually don't remember because our mind is not yet mature, but with repetition and practice, we finally learn to speak. Once we learn to speak, the humans who take care of us teach us what they know, which means they program us with knowledge. The humans we live with have lots of knowledge, including all the social, religious, and moral rules of their culture. They hook our attention, pass on the information, and teach us to be like them. We learn how to be a man or a woman according to the society in which we are born. We learn how to behave the right way in our society, which means how to be a good human. In truth, we are domesticated the same way that a dog, a cat, or any animal is domesticated, through a system of punishment and reward. We're told that we're a good boy or a good girl when we do what the grown-ups want us to do. We're a bad boy or a bad girl when we don't do what they want us to do. Sometimes we are punished without being bad, and sometimes we are rewarded without being good. out of fear of being punished and fear of not getting a reward, we start trying to please other people. We try to be good because bad people don't receive rewards. They're punished. In human domestication, all the rules and values of our family and society are imposed on us. We don't have the opportunity to choose our beliefs. We are told what to believe and what not to believe. The people we live with tell us their opinions, what is good and what is bad, what is right and what is wrong, what is beautiful and what is ugly. Just like a computer, all that information is downloaded into our head. We are innocent. We believe what our parents or other grown-ups tell us. We agree. And the information is stored in our memory. Everything we learn goes into our mind by agreement, and it stays in our mind by agreement. But first, it goes through the attention. The attention is very important in humans because it's the part of the mind that makes it possible for us to concentrate on a single object or thought out of a whole range of possibilities. Through the attention, information from the outside is conveyed to the inside, and vice versa. The attention is the channel we use to send and receive messages from human to human. It's like a bridge from one mind to another mind. We open the bridge with sounds, signs, symbols, touch, with any event that hooks the attention. This is how we teach, and this is how we learn. We cannot teach anything if we don't have someone's attention. We cannot learn anything if we don't pay attention. Using the attention, the grown-ups teach us how to create an entire reality in our mind with the use of symbols. After they teach us a symbology by sound, the grown-ups drill us with our ABCs, and we learn the same language, but graphically. Our imagination begins to develop, our curiosity grows stronger, and we start to ask questions. We ask and ask, and we keep asking questions. We gather information from everywhere. And we know that we've finally mastered a language when we are able to use the symbols to talk to ourselves in our head. This is when we learn to think. Before that, we don't think. We mimic sounds and use symbols to communicate. But life is simple before we attach any meaning or emotion to the symbols. Once we give meaning to the symbols, we begin to use them to try to make sense of everything that happens in our lives. We use the symbols to think about things that are real, and to think about things that aren't real, but that we start to imagine are real, like beautiful and ugly, skinny and fat, smart and stupid. And if you notice, we can only think in a language that we master. For many years, I spoke only Spanish, and it took a long time for me to master enough symbols in English to think in English. To master a language is not easy, but at a certain point, we find ourselves thinking with the symbols we learn. By the time we go to school, when we're 5 or 6 years old, we understand the meaning of abstract concepts like right and wrong, winner and loser, perfect and imperfect. In school, we continue to learn how to read and write the symbols we already know. And the written language makes it possible for us to accumulate more knowledge. We continue to give meaning to more and more symbols, and thinking becomes not only effortless, but automatic. Now the symbols that we learned are hooking our attention all by themselves. It's what we know that's talking to us, and we are listening to what our knowledge says. I call it the voice of knowledge, because knowledge is talking in our head. Many times we hear the voice with different tonalities. We hear the voice of our mother, our father, our brothers and sisters, and the voice never stops talking. The voice isn't real. It's our creation. but we believe that it's real because we give it life through the power of our faith, which means we believe, without a doubt, what that voice is telling us. This is when the opinions of the humans around us start taking over our mind. Everybody has an opinion of us, and they tell us what we are. As very young children, we don't know what we are. The only way we can see ourselves is through a mirror, and other people act as that mirror. Our mother tells us what we are, and we believe her. It's completely different from what our father tells us, or what our brothers and sisters tell us, but we agree with them too. People tell us how we look, and it's especially true when we are little children. Look, you have the eyes of your mother, the nose of your grandfather. We listen to all the opinions of our family, our teachers, and the big children at school. We see our image in those mirrors. We agree that this is what we are. And as soon as we agree, that opinion becomes a part of our belief system. Little by little, all these opinions modify our behavior, and in our mind we form an image of ourselves according to what other people say we are. I'm beautiful. I'm not so beautiful. I'm smart. I'm not so smart. I'm a winner. I'm a loser. I'm good at this. I'm bad at that. At a certain point, all the opinions of our parents and teachers, religion and society, make us believe that we need to be a certain way in order to be accepted. They tell us the way we should be, the way we should look, the way we should behave. We need to be this way. We shouldn't be that way. And because it's not okay for us to be what we are, we start pretending to be what we are not. The fear of being rejected becomes the fear of not being good enough, and we start searching for something that we call perfection. In our search, we form an image of perfection, the way we wish to be, but we know that we are not, and we begin to judge ourselves for that. We don't like ourselves, and we tell ourselves, "Look how silly you look. How ugly you are. Look how fat, how short, how weak, how stupid you are." This is when the drama begins, because now the symbols are going against us. We don't even notice that we've learned to use the symbols to reject ourselves. Before domestication, we don't care what we are or what we look like. Our tendency is to explore, to express our creativity, to seek pleasure and avoid pain. As little children, we're wild and free. We run around naked without self-consciousness or self-judgment. We speak the truth because we live in truth. Our attention is in the moment. We're not afraid of the future or ashamed of the past. After domestication, we try to be good enough for everybody else, but we're no longer good enough for ourselves, because we can never live up to our image of perfection. All of our normal human tendencies are lost in the process of domestication, and we begin to search for what we have lost. We start searching for freedom, because we're no longer free to be what we really are. We start searching for happiness, because we're no longer happy. We start searching for beauty, because we no longer believe that we are beautiful. We continue to grow, and in our adolescence, our body is programmed to introduce a substance we call hormones. Our physical body is no longer a child's, and we don't fit in with the way of life we lived before. We don't want to hear our parents tell us what to do and what not to do. We want our freedom. We want to be ourselves. But we are also afraid to be by ourselves. People tell us, "You're not a child anymore." But we're not an adult either, and it's a difficult time for most humans. By the time we are teenagers, we don't need anyone to domesticate us. We've learned to judge ourselves, punish ourselves, and reward ourselves according to the same belief system we were given, and using the same system of punishment and reward. The domestication may be easier for people in some places in the world and harder for people in other places. But in general, none of us has a chance of escaping the domestication. None of us. Finally, the body matures and everything changes again. We start searching once again, but now more and more what we are searching for is ourself. We are searching for love because we have learned to believe that love is somewhere outside of us. We're searching for justice because there is no justice in the belief system we were taught. We are searching for truth because we only believe in the knowledge we have stored in our mind. And of course, we're still searching for perfection, because now we agree with the rest of the humans that nobody's perfect.